Quiet, please.
You're listening to Birdies and Bogeys, hosted by Jordan Bloxham and Weston Mon, bringing you golf's week in review, recapping your favorite tournaments with professional insight from their perspective. Now, quiet, please. Here's your hosts, Jordan and Weston.
Weston, how is this fine evening?
Oh, just wonderful.
Wonderful. Is it still cold up in the Salt Lake area?
Yeah, frigid.
Yeah, frigid. Oh, I spent 2 days down where it's not warm, but it's not cold. I played golf the last 2 days in St. George, Utah. Like I said, not warm, but not 30 degrees either. So, bonus, bonus, bonus. Yeah, let's get into it. There was some happenings. Like, it was like we turned back the clock on the PGA Tour.
Oh, totally.
At least 4 years. But Mr. Justin Rose went to the AT&T Pebble Beach. It was expanded to a Monday finish to accommodate, because I think I saw it like Friday that it was like blowing stuff over. It was like calm, and then all of a sudden 30 mile with like 50 mile an hour gusts, I think. So something crazy. But ended up finishing on Monday, and he just kind of took it. Like, what did he shoot the final day? 66?
Yeah, it was a good score.
Yeah. Good score. Pulled away from the field to get his first win in 4 years.
Yeah.
What was his last win? I just saw that it was 4 years ago.
Oh, my goodness.
I want to say, you think that they would tell you.
I'm going to have to go deep into the stats.
What it was.
Almost got it.
I want to say it was like, was it Torrey? Or not? Yeah, was it Torrey?
We're going to find out. Oh, PGA Tour website's useless after the redesign. So, Wikipedia it is.
Like, it's so bad.
Oh, that's horrible. All right. So, let's see his victories here.
I want to say it was at Torrey Pines. Because that was when he was using when the TPT shaft had just launched. And he won with it. I could be wrong, but I think that was it. But, like, it's crazy to see. Well, I mean, he hadn't fallen, like, crazy off the map, right? He'd fallen to, like, 71st in the world. And then this win pushes him back up to 35, which is crazy that
yeah. You
win one tournament and you got your world ranking in half. Basically, drop it in half, whatever.
Yeah.
71 to 35 is a huge jump.
You're right. It was 2019 Farmers Insurance Open was his last victory. I think he just put Hamna in the bag and had won that. I mean, that's
yeah.
5 years ago. So,
yeah, four. But yeah, he had the TPT shaft in the bag. It's when that just came out. But But yeah, after that, he just, like I said, the Honda switch wasn't the best idea. And like you said, and it actually says in this thing, his quote was like, sometimes you start going down a bad track or getting going down a bad, like a bad path, right?
Yep.
And you just start trying too hard. And he's like, and this tournament just allowed me, because there's a bunch of goof offs and amateurs and playing. He's like, it just let me to just chill out. Like, well, maybe say in those words, I'm paraphrasing for Justin Rose.
Yeah.
But yeah. He basically said, just playing with these, you know, regular golfers allowed me to relax and get it done.
That's a good point.
Sometimes you just got to do that. You just got to kind of just relax and get it done.
It's yeah.
Kind of crazy, but
a lot of times people are like, oh, you're good at golf. I know you don't want to play with me. And I'm like, no, man. Like, there's no pressure. I can play bad and you'll be impressed.
Golf's a funny sport for sure. But kind of cool to see him back in it. Like then he, when he got the opportunity and just took it and ran with it, right? He was, I think, was he tied? I don't know, it was such a weird thing because they had to suspend Friday's round. And so then Saturday they played, finished, but they didn't finish all of it. So it was just a kind of a kerfuffle going into the weekend. And I think he was through like hole nine when play was suspended on Sunday. And I think he had a 2-shot lead at that point. Extended it because didn't he end up winning by 3? 15,
yeah, 18, he did.
15. So yeah, he was at 1500, and so he went 3 under his final 9 holes to push out for the 3-shot victory. So he didn't wilt, that's for sure. And there was the fourth round, usually they'll have hands playing because they continue the pro am portion of it, but since it was low weather delayed and the Monday finish, they sent all the celebs packing for the final round. But it was really weird because we were watching it. Just saw a few things of it on TV because I came down and played around down here. But, you know, those stands at Pebble, they're usually pretty packed. Not for when they finished, they weren't. There was not a lot of people there.
Gotta go to work.
Gotta go to work. Get out of NorCal.
Yeah. Well, here's a funny stat. With Justin Rose winning at age 42, it is the oldest player, only person that's won. That was older than him was Phil Mickelson at the PGA Championship in 2021.
Yep. I saw that stat too, which is a crazy stat, which you think about it, right? So he's 42. So there's not been a PGA Tour winner between the ages of 42 and 51. So. Nope.
At least since 2021.
Yeah, well, since 2021.
Yeah.
What is that there? Because didn't I feel like Phil would have won in between 42 and 51?
I think Phil would have if he can. I think he would have snuck another PGA Tour victory in if he didn't go live. But there's also some older players, too, that probably would have done the same, like Sergio. Who knows? He could have snuck one in and.
Yeah, but I'm saying, didn't Phil win one after the age of 42? Or is that just saying since 2021, he's the oldest?
I think that was the last one. I think Phil did not win. He'd won a ton on the Champions Tour. He went like 3 for 4.
Right.
But after that, he really just won that major.
Okay. But it's just saying the oldest since
Phil
won. Oh, okay. So it's a stat. Is it a relevant stat? Yes, he's an old guy who won. An older guy who won.
Yeah,
good for him. Good to see him get done. And when we dive into his bag here later, it'll be pretty interesting. And then you've got some backstory on it too, which is even better. Going to be a lot of Weston talking. He's done some dives on a few things today. So, and across the globe in Saudi, Abraham Ancer wins the Saudi International. And in the thing that I was reading about, Justin Rose not winning since 2019, they're like little drama in the Saudi Invitation because Abraham Ancer, a live player, beat out Cameron Young, who is PGA Tour Rookie of the Year, and on a conflicting event release or something. But now they're just looking for anything. But Abraham Ancer plays. Live guys are getting Asian Tour starts, which in turn will help them get world ranking points.
Well, it keeps them sharp and makes that particular tour stronger. And the crazy thing is if they gain enough world golf points, doesn't that qualify them to go to like the World Golf Championships? Or is that a ban that the PGA Tour could restrict even golfers ranked high enough to play in them?
It's got to be something. I think they changed it because they have, well, obviously, they've got a world golf event coming up in a couple weeks, right? Isn't that when the Austin match play is? Mm-hmm. And my guess is Cam Smith's not on that list. DJ's not on that list. Abraham Ancer won't be on that list. Whoever, because I think Abraham Ancer is probably still in the top 60. But I think they do it so that it's just the PGA Tour. Qualifier. So, which is not necessarily true, right? Because DP World Tours, but is it considered a PGA Tour event? An official PGA Tour event, like that ran by the tour.
Yeah.
But my guess is, I don't know, because I think they did it last year. They didn't let him play in any. They're getting that, and it does build up the strength of the field for those tournaments, so they are eligible for more world golf ranking points. And especially when you have guys like Cameron Young, did he move into the top 10 in the world? I think he did, close to. So when you have PGA Tour guys going over and playing, it helped. They're helping out live dudes. I
love it. Against their own good judgment.
Yes, sir. Let's see. There's a decent scores. It's bad when you're probably, you get a better website with the Asian tour. They do the PGA tour or an app anyway. Like Brad just pulled up Abraham Answers, all four of his rant, all four rounds that he played. 63, 66, 64, 68. Not bad, right? He nips Cam Young by two. Like Paul Casey was playing in it. But they had a bunch of live guys. Joaquin Neiman, Schwartzel, Lahiri, Gooch. Mickelson did play in it, and so did Cam Smith, both of who missed the cut.
Of golf.
Yeah, love it, but I actually think that Cam Smith is probably not been playing out. I heard that a rumor that Cam Smith had been kind of blackballed from some clubs in Florida because of his live move.
That's pretty petty.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, like I said, the live guys can play and they're going to keep proving it. And my guess is not this year, but next year they'll be getting world ranking points. So they'll continue to push up that world rank and at least keep it, not lose it as quick. And then have a couple of them that win majors. And then it's going to be a real cluster. I think it's good for the game, get them playing, right? They can still play and they're getting points so they don't lose world rankings as fast and let the whole thing sort out over the next 2 years.
Yeah, it'll work it out.
Sure, it will. I was going to think, well, actually, let's go back to the Pebble Beach. We're going to move this up. It was down the thing a little bit. But not only was Justin Rose a winner, Aaron Rodgers was also a winner. In controversial fashion, it's happened.
That was an interesting one. You know, you brought this up, and I was like, what? I got to research this. And yeah, the article stated that Mr. Rodgers is a 3 handicap at his home course, which is, you know, okay, cool. He's a 3 handicap. So what did he play at during the AT&T?
10.
10 handicaps, 7 extra pops. Like, who approved that?
Like, how did that even work? So it was to the point where, I mean, obviously there was a lot of attention on Aaron Rodgers because is he coming back? Is he going to go, you know, is he going to resign and go back to the Packers? Is he going to go somewhere else? And so there was a lot of that jabber throughout the week. But his handicap came into question. And Kevin Mitchell, during one of his press conferences, was like, yeah, if we're going to, you know, if I look and we're close to the worst second and that team, the Rodgers team isn't lead, gets it wins. I basically feel like we won.
Yeah. And
we're actually the winners of this trophy because it was controversial. But I mean, that's a huge difference, right? Like 10 and 3, like that's 7 shots that, so you're getting pops on 7 extra holes to help your team because they get the nets, the Hams get the net score.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I'd be pretty perturbed and you know, anybody really is if there's some type of hint of sandbagging. Now, the real question is, did Aaron Rodgers see that problem and not say anything? I mean, you'd have to assume, you know, when you get a scorecard and you got all the holes that you stroke on and you see that, and there's 10 of them, and you're like, well, I'm a three. I'm only supposed to get one or two aside, and I've got four aside or five. Like, what's going on here? And it might even be more given the course ratings and difficulties. So,
yeah, I guess that's pretty crazy, because usually it's like, okay, yeah, we're going to adjust for whatever. The course, right? Because he might be a three at his home club, and because of the rating or whatever they do. And I mean, I don't know. Because I know it can fluctuate slightly due to course rating and slope.
Yeah. But,
yeah. A little bit of smacks of some impropriety.
Well, it happens. It only happens once. That's kind of how it goes. After that, you're kind of put on a list and you get double checked twice before you walk in the building. And probably never see Rogers in the winner's circle again. So,
yeah, he's not getting the 10 again. So,
yeah.
But now new equipment is. First off, I'm going to let you take this and run with it, because you geeked out. You saw the article that said PhD launches golf ball, or whatever the
thing. Yeah, this is pretty interesting. You know, typically, I think there's been a lot of new golf balls introduced to the market as of late, as you have these competing business models from direct to consumer, subscription. Everybody's kind of getting in the game. And that's a good thing, you know, because the more competition there is, the better the product has to be to retain your customers, right? So I'm all for competition. But at the same time, if you're going to enter that market, like, you really got to put together a quality product to even have a chance, because the stuff that's out there, like, they have decades and decades of patents that are proven and are, you know, protect their IP incredibly well. And that, I mean, we're talking about like Titleist and TaylorMade and Callaway. They'll have some pretty innovative stuff, lots of patents around their golf ball manufacturing. And so PXG enters the market, and, you know, are they making their own golf ball? No, they're outsourcing it. That's okay. There's a lot of guys that outsource. You know, TaylorMade outsources. Only Callaway and Titleist and Bridgestone actually make their own golf balls. So everybody else that has one is outsourced in some capacity. But yeah, I mean, it's a cool market. But I read the article on Golf Spy, and they were able to inspect the golf ball. And what the writer there said is that the golf ball on the PXG actually mimics, or is similar, or from what he could tell, identical, the dimple pattern as same as the Costco Kirkland signature golf ball. So dimple pattern typically is something that is, you know, different between golf balls. To see a similar or identical dimple pattern is usually quite interesting, right? But just because the cover is the same doesn't mean what's on the inside is the same as well. And so I think this is where PXG probably put some money in some R&D and research to find out what materials on the inside are going to provide a golf ball that's really going to perform against the big guys. Now, when it comes to golf ball manufacturing, though, in my personal opinion, and this is me being a little aggressive on my thoughts, I guess. I think there's a cheap way and an expensive way to make the cover of a golf ball. And I personally prefer the look and feel of the expensive way. And so there is the urethane injection filled cover, which is used by Bridgestone. It's used by, I believe it's used by Srixon too, as well as Costco, and the, you know, so there's a lot of companies out there that use it, and it's not a bad way. It just has a different look to it. It's a little bit, I want to say, shinier to it, almost like glossy. And then there's a thermoset urethane, which is the more expensive process. And thermoset urethane is what Titleist uses on their cover. It just has like a deeper white to it in some ways. It's kind of different. But it is more expensive. It's a costlier process. And so when it comes to a golf ball, you'll typically see those injection urethane covers on those direct consumer balls, like a Vice ball or what's the other one? The Cut Blue or Cut, yeah, you know, Cut Gray. Yeah. So you're going to see that there, but the really nice thermal urethane, that one is going to be Titleist, TaylorMade, Callaway. And then the only direct to consumer that actually does it is, who's that guy? The guy that broke off from TaylorMade. You don't know.
Remember.
It's his own name, and it's a good golf ball, and it like consistently wins good stuff because he's the one that actually built most of the patents for. Like, he himself holds at least 24 patents in golf ball design. But I wish I could say, because he deserves credit.
I think I know what Vice Cut. Oh man, it's like a Vice.
It is.
It's a direct
Snell. It's a Snell. Yep. So really good ball, the Snell ball, and I personally like the cover that they use, but that's also the same one that I've always played with, like a Titleist. So I'm a little partial to that. That's what I'm used to. But I've played the Bridgestone, and their cover holds up. It's a good cover, but from a cost perspective and manufacturing, you will shave some dollars if you go that cast urethane. And so, not a bad thing, but it's just a look and a cost-effective way to make golf balls. So it puts the PXG golf ball on a pretty good price market of $39, and they're also only selling directly from their website. So you won't find that in the stores. You're going to have to order directly from them. But at least from the performance data. Oh, what was that?
Yeah, my guess is because according to their commercials, you can only get their PXG clubs fit by a PXG fitter, or, you know, PXG exclusive, right? Is what they say on there. But I know that for a fact to be false, because in Impact we have the ability to fit to PXG clubs and sell PXG clubs. But my guess is they'll do the same thing, right? They have accounts with courses, and a course wants to order some or have their customer order some, they'll sell them that way. So they won't just be a direct to consumer
deal. Yeah.
But they like to say that because it makes them look cool. I don't know. But does he say that we make the best balls, period, boom, kabow, whatever it says his all his commercials. But no, my guess is you'll get the guys who buy it because they're like, well, sweet, I can get a PXG ball and it's only $39. Right? Even though it maybe end up being crap. I mean, there's a possibility. They've gotten a little bit better with I still don't know anybody who like loves their woods. But their irons are good. They've been good since they they released, I still don't think they need to mess around with their, they do a cast one that is not good as far as their iron goes, but my guess is they'll market it because he's a really good marketer. Mr. Parsons is. So my guess is they'll market it and they'll sell some golf balls because they do have a better price point than your titles.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And this kind of gives you an idea of a peek into the PXG phenomena that it is. You know, you see their business model change like so dramatically. First, it's like, this is just for the rich people. Like golf clubs were like $1,000 each. And people were like scoffing at that. That's fine, right? But then they're like, we're priced like everybody else. And they're like, okay, well, that's more in line. That's great. But then they're like priced significantly less than everybody else. And so you see these kind of weird business models. You're like, what's going on here? But from the inside story, PXG, the golf company, was simply a way for Parson to burn cash so that he didn't have to pay taxes. Like literally, he had a ton of money, and if he didn't invest it in a business, he would have to pay taxes. So as a means to avoid seeing all that money just go to taxes, he invested in this new business. He dumped a ton of cash in it, right? Because it wasn't going to go anywhere anyways. And this is all legal, by the way. So, anyways.
Disclaimer, you are not a tax consultant.
I'm not a tax consultant.
Yeah. This is not tax advice. Just so everybody out there knows, we are not tax professionals.
No.
And this is not tax advice.
But funny enough, PXG is now generating so much of its own revenue that he needs to find a new project to dump money into, or it's just going to be all gone in taxes. So I know some people are like, what are they doing? Is things, I can assure you, things are doing just fine.
he has finally, because there was talk that he would never, just because of how much he put in, that he would ever get recoup the investment into that. But maybe.
He's doing fine. I mean, to continue to release product, to now invest in a new product category, to be in the golf ball market, you know, that's not a last ditch effort to get by or to get into the black, you know, get out of the red. When you do that, it's because you have extra money to expand your product line, and then you look to diversify. So in any case, it's going to be a competitive golf ball, to be honest. When you looked at the numbers, it spun just as much as a Pro V1X with a wedge. They did an 8-iron test. It spun just as much as the 8-iron on a Pro V1X in that ballpark. So you're going to get really consistent wedge and iron performance out of it. It did spin a little bit more off the driver than the Pro V1 and the Pro V1X. So, and I, when I say a little bit more, I mean like 150 RPMs more. So it's going to be very similar, but it's, if you're looking for a lower spinning ball, there are other options out there that are going to spin lower. But for most golfers, honestly, if you're in that 95 to 100 mile per hour driver swing, you're probably going to benefit from a golf ball that does spin a little bit more off the tee, because carry is king. And if the ball stays in the air longer, that's a good thing.
Yeah, this is true. This is very true. Like I said, we'll see. Because like I said, he's changed his business model. Now it's, they do a release and then they sell it at regular retail for a very, very short time. And then they just discount this crap out of it to push it, right? But I mean, it's working for him. Whatever he's doing, like, right? They're still selling golf clubs, so and so it's a win for him for sure.
So yep,
to see how the ball stacks up, right? Whether it can push into it, but I mean, it's going to stay. It's going to be a small sliver percentage wise of the overall golf ball market, just because TaylorMade, I mean, like it or not, does have the stranglehold on the golf ball market. And then, you know, a company like, I think Bridgestone has moved up there pretty good. But so it'll be a small percentage, but it'll be a percentage for sure.
Yep. No, it's to me, like, I'm all for it. You know, put product out there that competes, that challenges the status quo, provides a more affordable entry into golf and has good value and is consistent, because it just makes everybody be better. So that's my personal opinion.
For sure.
But
yeah, other equipment news. Bryson DeChambeau is no longer an official Cobra.
Yeah.
Offer. He's an equipment free agent. So he was testing out what, TaylorMade's driver?
Yeah, he had a TaylorMade driver. It's you know, I'm checking out the Cobra website. He's nowhere to be found. You know, their lead tour professionals are Ricky Fowler and Gary Woodland and Jason Duffner. You know, they got a pretty small stable of tour players, which, you know, that's fine. They've kind of always operated small. But, you know, Cobra's pretty good at marketing. And so they pick some really highly marketable people. But for these guys that jump to Live, you know, I would say before Live Golf, tour players actually needed equipment contracts because it was a significant source of income for them. But you consider how much money these guys are pulling in with these Live Golf contracts, and none of them over there need an equipment contract anymore. And you know, some of these guys were high value targets, like DJ, who was in the top 10 or maybe was less or whatever when he signed, but he was still a highly marketable, highly winning player. Most wins on the PGA Tour of active players, you know, minus Phil and Tiger. So, I mean, these players were highly marketable. So is Bryson. You know, I think he was in the top 10 or around there. And when you get near that top 10 stable, you get really nice equipment contract deals, but they were dwarfed by the money they were making at Live. And now equipment is kind of like an afterthought when it comes to Live. Like, nobody's out there doing any research, any news, nothing on equipment. It's just, who cares? Because we make so much money that we'll just play whatever we want. So it's kind of this unique arena of tour players playing what works for them, which I think is cool. And then, you know, people just making more money and not mattering that they need these club contracts. So pretty unique circumstance.
Yes, for sure. So then you can play, right? My guess is in just about every guy's bag, they're like, well, if I could change this and this club, if it's because it's, you know, but it's going to be in their contract. So it's right. They may switch out things if they had that opportunity to move some things around. Because you'll see a lot of the guys that go free agent that end up playing a good amount of the stuff that they were playing before because it worked. But then they were able to change out the pieces of the bag that they didn't necessarily like.
So, yeah.
Then it'll be interesting to see where he kind of falls on that. Where guys, you know, as they keep losing, I mean, obviously, Taylor Meek has not dropped Dustin Johnson, even though they don't use him in anything, any commercials anymore, right? Because, you know, whatever PGA Tour told them, it was bad. And so they're not going to give them, you know, they're not going to give up the probably some rights to whatever, like to advertise the PGA Tour. So,
yep.
It'll be interesting. Like I said, it'll play out over the next couple of years and what happens, but equipment free agents are kind of cool in my book.
Yeah, and which makes.
And we'll see that coming up.
Yeah, actually, that's the next topic.
With Justin Rose's What's in the Bag.
Yeah, this is really cool. I mean, granted, this is a guy who has been jumping around on equipment ever since his last victory. Because he was pretty solid with his TaylorMade stuff where he's winning once a year, basically. And then he switches to Honma and he wins the Farmers. And he kind of just falls off the map. But he's been jumping around. I saw him with Titleist irons in the bag, back to TaylorMade. Now, and then the story is the Cobra rep walked by him and he's like, hey, we got some new stuff. And he's like, really? Let me take a look. And so he actually had a history with Cobra. His first year on tour, he was playing Cobra. And I don't know if it was one or two years of that he was on contract with them, but he was playing their stuff before. So it wasn't a surprise that Rose was going to, you know, be open to trying Cobra golf clubs. So he tries some stuff and he's like, oh, I like this, but switch this up a little bit. And they came to a pretty quick deadline where the tour trucks by PGA bylaws or something rules, they got to be gone by like Wednesday afternoon. Like they cannot hang around. And I don't know why, but that's just the rules. And so the tour staff for Cobra was like, let's pound this out quick. So they got to work trying to get these clubs dialed in for them. And so they built them and dropped them off late Wednesday morning, as in right on the button, and turns out he loved them and threw them in the bag, and what do you know, victory. So pretty crazy that homeboy throws these irons in the bag and first 4 days and he just got it done, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, new clubs, right? Like I said, all the mojo was working in his favor.
Oh yeah. And here's a cool stat. You might not think it's that great, but his greens in the regulation for the week was 69.4. And you're probably thinking, well, these guys usually have like they're in the 70s or 80s or whatever for the week. Well, sometimes they are, but if you remember what course they're playing Pebble Beach. And Pebble Beach is actually known for having tiny, tiny greens.
And they went through pretty, like, there was a stretch. I mean, in that second and third rounds, that it was not playing easy, right? When you start getting small greens and it's blowing, you know, 25 plus, you're going to miss some greens.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it is pretty crazy. So anyways, needless to say, that's definitely the core of his bag. And we'll talk about that, but we'll start at the top. I think this marks the fourth win out of five tournaments since the Callaway paradigm was introduced. So yeah, Rose,
he was wrong twice.
Yeah.
Now, Justin Rose.
Yeah.
Who was the fourth one? Did Xander get a win?
Yeah.
Xander got a win.
Yeah. So there's your four.
I think that's right. So they're having a good start to the year.
Yeah.
They're kind of pulling a 2022 Titleist thing on us, where Titleist had a pretty good run.
They did.
A bit of getting those early wins.
So, yeah. So
the Paradigm 8.5, which is not the trend that's going around lately. So you know, the lower loft to draft.
Yeah. But you know, he's got the Ventus Black in there, low spin. I think it's just kind of his type of swing and how that driver matches up. So he's a tall guy too. So he's 6'3". Most people don't know that. They kind of figure he's average to height, but he's one of the taller guys on tour. And so when you're that tall, you get some nice long arc, and he's got some speed still, even for an old 42-year-old.
Yes, he was the Paradigm Ventus Black. Then he goes to the Paradigm 3-wood to match that up, but then goes with the Diamana 80TX.
Yeah. I think that was just him like being comfortable. He'd been playing those shafts in his fairways for quite some time. I think the Paradigm Triple Diamond was really just a replacement for his M6 TaylorMades, which are really old considering bonded hosel scenario. And so I think this was just a perfect way to phase that out, even though he still carries the M5 or M6 5 wood, same shaft. And he just, fairway woods are funny, man. You find them, you keep them.
And then, like I said, he may have just worn through that M6 3 wood, right? He's not going to play the 5 wood as much. So he may have just got to the point where that one wasn't in the cards anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he still got his M6 5 wood, which, right? They went through this. So that's made it from, you've had the Sim 2 Stealth, and now Stealth 2. So that's five generations ago that the M6 was released.
Old stuff.
It's a bit of time. And then,
The newest edition, just a week old, we've got a really cool blended set of the Cobra King irons. So you start off with the 4-iron, which is a Cobra King forged tour. And I guess the best way to explain what that iron is, if you haven't seen it, because it is kind of new, it's like a multi-material cavity back that has the shape and size of a tour iron. So if you know Titleist irons, it would be like a comparable T100 style iron, or the Apex tour cavity back. You know, similar styling, size, everything. Tour head. Lots of forgiveness and technology. So a lot of guys are doing that on tour, where they're getting, Max Homa did that. He's playing T100s in the long irons. And so pretty normal to see that. And then he phases into a traditional cavity back, forged one piece, everything you'd expect out of just a nice forged cavity back. But they're really more like semi cavity backs. They're more muscly, but technically they are a CB. And then he goes into the blades on the lower end. And so beautiful set makeup. It's pretty cool to see three different type of irons all wrapped up into one blended set. So I always love seeing that.
Yeah, it's like that. For those, you know, regulars, the weekend warriors, whatever you want to call them, it's a good way to set up your set, right? Because people will be like, I just can't play that because it's too big. I'm like, well, you probably need to play this at some point because your swing's not that good. I mean, that's not anything, right? I don't expect, you know, a 35-year-old that's got a full-time job and four kids at home to be able to just practice all the time that started 3 years ago. You know, they're not going to be, you know, they're not going to have tour level swings.
No.
It's just not how that works. So.
Yeah. It's the reality. Like, I mean, if you want to play blades, that's awesome. Go play blades, but you're not going to have the proficiency of what you want to accomplish. Even if you're a scratch golfer, like they're just mean.
Very unforgiving.
And here's a guy who just proved that he's at the top of the game, you know, winning the AT&T, and he's only got blades in 7-iron through pitching wedge, and the rest is cavity backs. So,
the guy like Colin Morikawa, who supposedly long iron wise is one of the best,
does
not play a true blade set.
Nope.
As it progresses up. So,
which again, I've been a staunchy blade player for well over 15 years, or maybe even longer. Heck, no, yeah, longer. I've been playing full sets of blades since 1999. So, it's time to go cavity backs. That's all I'm saying.
So, is this a sneak peek into a Weston Mon club change?
Possibly. I always want to put at least three seasons on a set of irons. This is my third and final season, and I do. It's a mini combo set. It's not even worth mentioning the combo set. I have a cavity back 3-iron, and then four through pitching wedge and pure blades. By no means am I helping myself.
That's not a combo set. That's just basically throwing a driving iron in, probably get a 3-iron. But no, like I said, and I've made that move. I still really like to go out certain times and, you know, take out my blades that I do own and play them, just because I love looking at a blade and that smaller face. So there's something to be said for that, but like I said, they're not nice at times, right? You have to be a pretty quality ball striker to get all you need out of blades. And manufacturers and technology has gotten to a point where you can get a really forgiving blade-ish.
Yeah.
Like cavity back, right? Like the T100. It's not like a true what you would call cavity back, but it's also not a blade. It kind of hangs in that middle ground where you can work on it. So
yeah. You just can't tell from its playing position, which I think is pretty awesome. You might be able to see something in the long irons, maybe. And that's just
been there.
Not really. Yeah. Pretty hard to see.
Yeah.
But I personally though, I think when push comes to shove, I'm gonna rebuild my set from the ground up. I'm gonna play 60 still, but it's gonna go 60, 56, 52. 48 all in wedge style, and then I'll probably play a 9-iron in blade and an 8-iron in blade, and that's pretty much blades from 8-iron to 60. But that's like, that's a lot of clubs right there. That's 6 irons basically, all blades, and then 7-iron and up will be cavity backs. Just because my scoring clubs, like, I don't really, yeah, I still like the consistency of the blade in those, and I'm not really looking for distance. I don't need to hit an 8 iron 190, so it's just more of like a 150 club.
It makes sense. Like I said, good advice for that. But yeah, now we go into another manufacturer in Justin Rose's bag.
Yeah. His watches. Yep. We are diving into Titleist Vokey Design SM9 52F and 56M. He was playing with a couple options, but these ones made it into the bag. And then he goes into another manufacturer with TaylorMade Milled Grind Hyto 6007, which he has been gaming for some time now. Been very pleased with that wedge and the Hyto series. I think he almost played a 56 Hyto, but the Vokey made it in the bag for him. So again, just like he's playing what he likes to look at and what works, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, then he goes into the ugliest club in his bag.
Yeah, I mean, if I were to be judging a beauty contest, I would definitely not let this one get on the stage. This is the Axis One. Saber-tooth gooseneck, basically.
It's not good. And they've gotten, I mean, he's had it in his bag for a while. I think he's maybe like switched out like for a round or two or a tournament or two, where he's like, oh, maybe this will be the key to me not sucking as much anymore.
Yeah.
I say that in jest. He's dropping to 71 in the world. It's not like you were playing crappy all the time. and you're the worst player on the planet. And back up to 35. So he was around and obviously accumulating points for the last 4 years to drop. I mean, I think when he won in 2019, he was maybe a top 10 and then pushed into the 70s. So he was getting some points.
Yeah, it's been steady.
Is he a bad player? But I think there was some things where he's like, I'm not playing great. I need to try some different things. But
yeah, I mean, this is
2 years have been Axis, yeah, almost exclusively.
He's been great in the past, right? He was world number one for about 3 months, and the guy's got over 25 professional wins, 11 on the PGA Tour, 11 on the European Tour, and then some scattered. But that's like, that's crazy. You win over 10 on the PGA Tour and 10 on the European Tour. That takes some incredible skill. He does have one major. It's the US Open. That ain't bad. And so, and he's had some really close calls, you know, tied for second at the Open Championship, tied for third at the PGA, solo second, and tied for second at the Masters. So really, really good golfer. But, you know, we get super critical. What, you're not in the top 10? You must be horrible. But simply put, he's still one of the top, you know, 50 golfers in the world now. Which is a pretty elite group.
Yeah, he's back in that now. So, I don't know. But, yeah, the putter, it works. Like I said, I don't know what he went through. But he has, it looks like he has that. He used to have the, what did they call it? Like the flat cat or something.
Yeah.
Grip on there. Now he's got a lampkin, basically. Same.
Yeah, the same thing. It's meant for pistol. It's meant for the claw grip. So,
yeah.
Those are a unique grip that makes that particular putting style comfortable. So, it's a little bit wider, depending on how wide it's at least 1.5 times wider than a standard grip, which is going to let you claw on there nicely. So pretty much it.
Yeah, I'm still like I have, I know friends who putt with the claw. I still do not agree with it as a putting method, but you feel comfortable over the ball and feel like you're going to stroke it well and stroke it.
Yeah.
It gives you a better opportunity to make a stroke.
Yeah. Yeah. Putting is such a unique thing. I mean, everybody goes through their own putting demons and you just got to do something. But, and then lastly, golf ball with Mr. Rose. We've got the titles Pro E1 Left Dot. And man, that's a popular golf ball. And I think some of its characteristics have bled into the new 2023. At least that's what I've heard. So if you want that left dottiness, then yeah, go out and buy some new Pro V1s.
Yeah, go find it. Yeah, it's good. And this week, upcoming little tournament preview is, you know, the Garbage Open.
Yeah, the People's Open.
The People's Open, the Garbage Open. And it's not Waste Management anymore. It's just WM. I don't know why.
Because to have the word waste in your name is a negative connotation. And
yeah. Especially when you get everything, it's like, let's get wasted. And that's what everybody did. And they still do. It doesn't matter.
Yep. And it just, I think that's what they wanted to get away from, was the wasted open. And yeah, that, I mean, there's a pretty ridiculous vibe that goes on there. It's a spectacle. I say, hey, go for it. But because I want to see some weird stuff happening.
It's one tournament a year. Go crazy.
Yeah.
Right. There's a few tournaments where you're just like, okay, yeah, cool, you chase switch it up, go for it. It's just go with it. If you're gonna do it, own it. But yeah, it's always pretty low scores, and there's seems to always be some drama about in that 16, 17, 18 kind of area, or it might be 15 too, because 15 is a reachable par 5, and then you have 16 and all its glory. And then 17, where people have lost it because they've
gone for it
in the water. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's some interesting dynamic to it, but it is one of those courses where like the winner shoots 20 plus under. So
it's
a putting contest out there, folks.
It is. Like I said, there's only one tournament like it. And like I said, and I think it's okay to be its own thing, right? They've leaned into it a lot with the stands, and it seems like they're always adding some more. I'm pretty sure that I heard at one point it takes like a total of, it's like 3 months setting it up, or 4 months setting it up, 3 months taking it down. Which I actually think they're looking to build it just as a permanent structure rather
than why not
spend half the year taking it up and down.
Well, it's so big now that you kind of need to.
And it's just, it actually makes like your course right now, when people go there, if they go there in the middle of the summer, if it's a permanent structure, they still get the whole amphitheater experience, right? Even though, I mean, it's weird because if you play TPC Scottsdale on any simulator, the that doesn't have it, that hole looks totally different than what it seems to look like with the bleachers.
Yep.
And the big structure. So it's always a fun week, and it's always falls on Super Bowl week too. So there's that. So we're gonna go off topic. Who's your prediction to win the Super Bowl?
I'll go Chiefs.
Any particular reason?
Probably because, if my memory serves me correctly, that's Andy Reid's team, right?
It is.
And I like Andy Reid for BYU reasons. So there's my connection.
I was letting you get there. I was leading you through it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well, I will be rooting for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Ah, we have a rivalry.
We do have a rivalry. But yeah, for different reasons. Some of that which is really weird because they're in the same division of the team that I have rooted for since I was a wee boy in the Washington Commanders. Redskins, whatever. I have a hard time calling them the Commanders because it's an awful name. but yes. My son is a big fan of Jason Kelce. And if you ever get a chance, the Kelce brothers do a podcast that is pretty funny. Very insightful about the NFL game as well, but it's pretty funny. Yeah, it's hard to root for a guy that talks like Kermit the Frog and Holmes. No, I mean, in all seriousness, like, really good teams, and Pat Mahomes is amazing. So it'll be interesting. I could tie it to the Utah roots because Britton Covey is returning kicks for Philadelphia.
Yeah,
Britton Covey was a Ute, so. I think there's just a couple. I think there's another player.
Is this now a holy war? Is this where we've gone?
Well, according to everybody else, it's the Kelce Bowl because you have the first time in NFL history where two brothers are playing against each other in the Super Bowl.
Well, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. So, but other than that, I think that's it. We have brought you all of our weekly knowledge that we feel that you need to know. Sure, there's some things if we wanted to deep dive on some things, but everything close to our hearts and that stuck out was mentioned. So hopefully you guys liked it. we do appreciate it, your listenership. But until next time, we are out.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Birdies and Bogeys. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe, leave us a rating and review, and until next time, have a great week.